want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna, you wanna, you wanna, you wanna, you wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio with this bro, Scotty Mo? It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody spark a spliff for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to this podcast. I'm Kevin Smith. Okay, man, if you're new, if you're like, wait, what? We're in the middle of an adventure where me and the great Chris Jericho are diving deep on the fantastic just movie from our childhood that shaped the individual I would become. You've heard me talk about this before. I love this fucking movie, but so does Jericho. So that we have to sit and talk about it. We're in the middle of watching the Bad News Bears. We were over on Talk is Jericho, where we just spent an hour watching the first half of the movie and bullshitting and chit-chatting. And so right now, we're going to pick up where we left off on the movie. This is the second of two parts in this crossover fucking adventure, where we're going to continue watching the Bad News Bears. If you're not a regular Talk is Jericho listener, go back and listen to part one before you listen to part two.
It's up right now.
Podcast. Yeah, you could go listen to it right now. You'll hear the first half of the conversation. We're going to jump into the second half of the movie. We're paused at 56 minutes and 34 seconds as Buttermaker is distributing athletic supporters to the team and stuff.
We called them jocks.
Back in the day.
That's back in the day. And by the way, just for anybody that came over from Talk is Jericho, I can't believe it. You're right. Brandon Cruz, which is funny because as soon as you said that, I remember the name. He was in Dr. No, and that's K-N-O-W, and then he was also the lead vocalist with the Dead Kennedys.
So he was a Dead Kennedy.
He was a Dead Kennedy guy later on in the thing. And also you mentioned the courtship of Eddie's father. So you were very right about this.
I read a story. I think it was online, or maybe I saw him do an interview. Or I definitely read a story where, you know, we talked about over on Talk is
Talk Jericho.
And we're spoiling it here, but you know, most people have seen this movie.
It's 43 years old. And I think the statute of limitations for spoiler alerts has been
passed. But in the scene where his cinematic dad gives him the slap down
right
on the field, where Roy Turner slaps Joey Turner, Rick Morrow literally slapped that kid, Brandon Cruz, and he said he didn't hold back. He gave it fucking his all and fucking screamed at him. He indicated that it was not cool. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't like, yeah, Morrow he asked me ahead of time if I could really.
Brandon said that it wasn't cool?
Yeah.
Wow. I get the hint from this. And once again, you've been in show business for a long time, as have I. I can get a read on someone very quickly.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's playing a character, and I would never misconstrue his acting abilities. I get the hint that Vic Morrow might not have been the nicest guy.
Well, think about this. Our two big exposures to him, probably, you would say, Bad News Bears and The Twilight Zone. And both of those, he's playing an asshole.
Right.
So and nobody ever gave us good Vic Morrow.
Right, right. Do we ever see... Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who knows? Like, in a movie. I'm sure in real life he was
I love guy. That quote. Hashtag, nobody ever gave us good Vic Morrow.
Some would say nobody ever gave better Vic Morrow than Vic Morrow himself.
But we're continuing on. So, right, as you're saying.
But before we dive into the movie, just for those
who are just joining us.
Yeah, who are just joining us. Of course, Chris is in... Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. He's fantastic.
What an honor. Movie. Thank you.
He did a great job. And he's also like, it's not blink and you miss it. But at first, based on the nature of his outfit, it may take you a second to be like, holy shit, that's Jericho. And also, just like in Kilroy Was Here, which is an indie flick that I shot down in Sarasota with the also kids awesome. Of the Ringling, that Jericho was in. One of the sweetest guys in the world is playing so against type twice that I've cast him. In one, he's like just horrible. And the other, he's even worse. But that's the mark of a fucking great actor. Like, you pull it off.
That's one thing. That's very cool for me to
be able to play
get
against
those
type.
Opportunities. Because a lot of times it'd be like, oh, Jericho's this. But the first time, and it was so, like, I don't even know if we've ever even discussed this. You probably don't remember this. I actually said to you, dude, are you in town on X and X date? Because we've been talking about doing a Bad News Bears kind of retro show or review or whatever you want to call it for a long time.
A little watch along.
Yeah, watch along. And I said, are you in town on this date? You said, no, I'm filming a movie in Florida. Where in Florida? Sarasota. I live like an hour from there. And like 20 minutes later, you said, do you want to come play with us? You want to do something? And we had talked about that for years. And you know Hollywood, like for someone to go, oh yeah, we should work together. It's like bands. Oh, we should tour together.
Right.
Oh yeah, sure. When you actually said, let's do something, I was like, really? Like, sure. And you like, do I have to audition or should I send in the tape? And you're like, no, here's the part. And it's this crazy, awesome part of the Gator Chaser, which we won't get into. There's a twist on Gator. But it's this very evil.
He's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude. He's a fucking asshole and he's psychotic and
he's a vlogger, kids.
Vlogger
so
kids.
On top of it, on top of like, hey, Jericho, come play against type. Come do like, and it's the performance, you're carrying it. Like you've got, he had like fucking 4 pages of dialogue where the block kicks in and stuff. And it's a segment. It's like a 20, 25 minute segment. Mm-hmm. Like a
Twilight, it's an anthology. It's an anthology, yeah.
So not only is he, hey man, come on out and play. Then when he got there, we were like, Chris, the nature of this demands, the nature of this shot, performance, character demands that you have to actually shoot this yourself. Mm. So then on top of it, we made him be his own cinematographer as well. And fuck, did he fucking nail it. It was really great.
But I love the fact that you think that was such, like, just like, sure, no problem, dude. Like, I'll film my own stuff. But you were like, oh my God, I film his own stuff.
Like, because it's tough enough to be the actor.
I got you.
Remember,
I got
all that dialogue. But you were also like, now I got to keep myself in frame and fucking like, oh, it was dynamite.
But it's a real.
I remember that night going like when I got back to the room, I was like, God damn it. You can throw anything at him. Like, that's versatility and shit.
But once again, I thought that was pretty cool for me, like obviously as being, you know, a performer or whatever. And you said this to me, you said, anytime I do a movie, you're going to be in it. And I was like, listen, like no fucking bullshit. Like we talk about in the last episode, Talk of Jericho, like when you grow up, you know, enjoying something and then you get a chance to do it. Like
right.
I'm a big fan of yours and have been. I caught on the Ride of the Lightning. Like, as I always say, like Metallica, Ride of the Lightning. I went back to Kill 'Em All. Kevin Smith, I caught the train on Mallrats, went back to Clerks. But then after that, every movie I went to, all of them, including Yoga Hosers and everything else, every movie, Red State, whatever. And to me, to be invited to do Kilroy and then say, well, I'll do a movie with you every time you're in the movie. And then you actually called me for Jay and Silent Bob.
The next time we did a movie.
This guy's legit. He's real. But and
that,
then,
but that also again has something to do with like, oh shit! When he came out to play, he came out to fucking play. Like, that's a delight when you're putting together a production where you're like, you know, all right, I never acted with him before, or had him act in something I was doing. What's this going to be like? How long until we get each other's rhythm? Plus, I'm adding on to it.
Sure.
Hey man, you got to shoot this as well, and blah blah blah. And so, like to fucking hit the ground running and be like, holy shit, man, that's fucking talent. Instantly, you're like, all right, I want that one again.
Which,
because I know I can count on you. So next time around,
yeah,
I could throw what I did at you, which is like, again, way against fucking type for Jericho and shit.
But such a
and
cool,
he made it sing.
But like I said, it's such an honor, both those parts, the Gator Chaser and then
the other guy,
which is a very evil, very, you know, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it,
very 80s.
Exactly.
Like it feels like
big time.
It's
Fletch,
80s,
it's Fletch,
it's an 80s road movie moment.
Sure it is. But to me, like, and like you're such a humble guy, but you know your talents and stuff. Like to me, like if Spielberg calls or Scorsese calls, Kevin Smith calls, like to me for my generation of
an
80s, 90s guy, like that's a big fucking name.
You're very sweet.
And but dude, I called like the roommate that I was with when we first started watching all these stuff. Dude, you're not going to believe it. What? I'm in Jay and Silent Bob. Fuck off. No way. Cause we watched it together. We went to, we had to go in, we lived in Calgary and we had to go down to like the Art House Cinema, which was about 45 minutes from where we lived, to see Chasing Amy because it was playing like in one theater in town.
You made the effort to.
Yeah, because it was, I would rather see that than, you know, a Batman movie. So to be a part of it, you know, no, fuck off. You know, my point is, it was such a like, dude, like talk about full circles, like shit, right?
Being able to be like, holy
crap. Like, dude, like we did it. Like, this is it. And it's not just for me. It's for a couple of the cats that I grew up with going, dude, you're not going to believe this one. And to me, like I said, that's a pretty cool thing to be able to say when not only are you happy for yourself, but you have some friends that can go like if you like, dude, I'm in a movie like I got Mark Hamill. Like, right. Like what?
Like holy shit, what? He rang a bell.
Cockknocker, that bullshit character, Mark Hamill's playing it. I can't believe it. Yes. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of a cool exclamation point on a career. So
the for those out there that are like don't follow wrestling, Chris made a huge fucking name for himself in the world of wrestling. Mm. And that's going back to when to win.
Fuck, man. I started in 1990. But on the United States level, like a national level, 96, when I started with WCW, which was on the TNT network, Turner.
It was called WCW.
WCW. It was owned by Ted Turner.
So what was the C?
World Championship Wrestling.
That doesn't exist anymore?
No, that Vince McMahon bought it.
It was
in 2001.
WWE.
Yes, and for the last 18 years, he's been the monopoly of wrestling.
So there's when folks think of wrestling, of course, the mainstream that doesn't think about wrestling on a regular basis, but to them, there is only one fucking brand.
Like, yeah,
and it's that.
It's WWE. Yeah,
you were raised in that. Fucking, mm-hmm. You became like huge in that world. Mm-hmm. For those that don't follow, your contemporaries at the time, are you in there around Rock and stuff?
Oh, yeah, like yeah, yeah. Rock and I had a great rivalry. Great rivalry.
Really?
Like yeah, great rivalry. He's
and were
actually
you a good guy bad, or a bad guy?
Way bad guy. Because with a guy like The Rock, because people hear something like, he's such a huge star in Hollywood as an actor and as a producer. People forget or don't know, as a wrestler, he was really, really good. Like, he was a great performer in the ring. Athletically,
he came from like a wrestling background.
Yeah, his
right?
father's like his a wrestler. His grandfather's a wrestler. He's third generation.
Wow.
So he's a natural. But his personality is so over the top and so big that to go toe to toe with him, you have to have the same personality. Mm-hmm. So he needed a big, larger than life bad guy to even come close to his big, larger than life good guy persona. And that's what I provided. So when we started locking horns and when I got confidence to match up with him, it was really good. It was a good 6 month thing. And if you ask him, it might have changed now, but we had a match in Honolulu in Hawaii, which is where he grew up as a poor 14-year-old kid because his grandfather ran the territory and then he died and his grandmother took it over. There's a lot of lineage and history. And it was his first match in Hawaii, and we tore the house down, man. Bruce Willis was there in the front row because he was filming Heart's War at the time.
Holy shit.
A lot of cool elements of things that went on. But I remember when
he's got a win in his hometown.
Of course he won.
So what kind
I'm not sure I ever beat him, as a matter of fact. But when he beat me and was covering me, and you call it holding the leg, and it was 1, 2, 3, he went, "Thanks, man. That was the best match. That was my favorite match I've ever had."
That's dope.
And it might have changed, but at that time, you know, he's been such a big star for so long.
Was he in it before you were in it, or did you guys come in?
Oh, no, together? I was in longer than him.
But you were there, and then, so you were in.
No, I wasn't in WWE, but I started in 90.
Right.
He probably started in 95. I got to WWE in 99. I think he probably started there in 96, 97.
Right.
So by the time I got there, he was like the biggest of the big. But still, like to this day, like I don't talk too much. You know, things change and people move on. But whenever we see each other, rare times, it's always like, "What's up, dude?" Like there's a connection there that doesn't exist with a lot of people. It's like war buddies. We're at war together in the trenches. You know,
that's dope. And or like being in a movie, like, oh, we were in that fucking flick together.
Right,
that flick was huge for a minute.
It was probably the biggest movie in the world, and then you don't see each other for 10 years, and then like, oh my god, like, what's up, dude? Like nothing changes, right?
So in the wrestling, I mean, beyond wrestling, a lovely thing about Chris is he, quite like myself, he's a Renaissance man. He does a lot of things, as you heard, of course. If you don't listen on your, he's got a podcast as well. That's something that he has been doing for a couple fucking years now.
It's almost 6 years now.
Fuck,
we're almost at 600 episodes. You were like in the first year, man, like in the before 100 episodes.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got that. He's got Fozzie, which is his band, and he tours with.
Yeah, like, dude, we're opening for Iron Maiden here.
Are you shitting me?
At the Bank of California Stadium.
How big? So what is that?
30,000 people. I think it's where the Galaxy plays in L.A. I was, dude, let me tell you about the best day of my life. One of the best days of my life. You'll appreciate this. I was in New Zealand, maybe November or October of this year, last year. And you're a little bit jet lagged. I woke up at 5 a.m. I get this email from Iron Maiden's manager. Do you want to open for us in Los Angeles in September? And I type back, open for who? And he's like, Iron fucking Maiden. Who do you think? I'm like, oh, I didn't think you actually met Iron Maiden. I thought maybe you had a different band or whatever. Yes, we'll open for you. Call my manager, like, dude, we got to make this happen. And then find out it's in the stadium in LA and we lock it in and it's all great. Literally 3 hours later, I get another email from one Miss Jordan. Tell me with her last name. Monsanto. Kevin would like you to play this part in the new Jay and Silent Bob movie. And I look it up and it's like this guy as we're talking about, which is a tremendous dude. In the same day,
that's dope.
I get asked to open for Iron Maiden with my band and then get asked to play this amazing part in Jay and Silent Bob. I was like, this.
Had you been visited by three ghosts in the night or something? What predicates such a wonderful day?
I don't know. I don't know what I did.
So wait a second. What's the biggest crowd you've ever played for in front of?
There's a festival in England called the Download Festival. We've played probably four or five times. We've done main stage three times, and they do about 90,000.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What was the largest crowd you ever wrestled in front of?
What's the name? We're not football guys. We're a couple dumb idiots, but there's a new stadium in Dallas, which is called the so-and-so whatever.
The one with the giant expensive screens.
Yeah, AT&T Center. It was the one
where the Cowboys
Jones. Yeah, the Cowboys played. That one, I think, did 101 for WrestleMania 2016.
So yeah. You're a man who's been at, like, you make your living in front of a live studio audience, generally speaking.
Basically, just a big studio.
Yeah, for a long, long time, you're a live performer.
Yeah.
I bring up the wrestling thing before we dive, of course, into the Bears, because just recently you did something fucking huge and historic.
Well, basically the new company is All Elite Wrestling, and
explain for those.
It's a company that's owned by the family that owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. They got a lot of money. There's a lot of guys whose contracts came up at the same time that are worldwide, critically acclaimed, hugely successful guys that no one's ever seen on a national basis in this company, in this country.
And for those, again, who don't follow, there's WWE. When we were kids, there used to be like...
There's a bunch.
ECW, and then there's this wrestling WCW, organization.
And there's this
thing. Now it's just pretty much WWE.
Yeah, WWE/WWF ate them all up.
But somewhere, people are wrestling, but not for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of smaller places. I mean, you can let's go to Rahway, New Jersey on a Saturday night at the Veterans Center, and they'll draw 1,000 people or whatever. But as far as mainstream major promotions, it's just WWE. There's one in Japan called New Japan Pro Wrestling,
which you worked for last year.
I worked for last year.
I remember reading that on Twitter. Yeah. It was a huge one night at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
You exploded. I thought you had died because it was like Chris Jericho's trending. I'm like, at 2 a.m, no.
Like, no. No, please no.
What did you do?
Please no.
He was such a good boy. But it was because you jumped on stage and wrestled.
Yeah, at the Tokyo Dome, which is, 50,000, 60,000 people.
Jesus.
So there's a real huge scene happening over there. A lot of the guys that were working over there were very big stars, but they're American, or the one guy in general, Kenny Omega, who I worked at the Tokyo Dome, also from Canada, also from Winnipeg, where I'm from, close to Gimli, where you filmed, Tusk and Yoga Hosers. Was it Tusk?
We set it there. We didn't, but we shot Tusk in North Carolina, and we shot Yoga Hosers in Los Angeles.
I fell hook, line, and sinker for that
one. I dreamed of being able to shoot in Winnipeg.
Gimli is where you are. Next time, my dad lives in Gimli.
Does he really?
That was
where the fucking plane landed. Gimli glider.
They still have the giant fake plane there.
It was a racetrack, and they were doing like go-kart racing, and then all of a sudden...
If you ever want to do another movie in Gimli, my dad would like let all your crew stay there. Oh, yeah, I got the junior hockey team staying here. There's 15 guys. I'm like, Dad, you got 3 beds. Oh, we put sleeping bags down, and we just had a great time. I woke up at 6 a.m. and made breakfast for everybody.
Jericho's dad was a hockey player.
10 years?
NHL. I mean, like an NHL hockey player.
Yeah, 10 years in the NHL. He was in the first configuration of the LA Kings.
Holy fuck, really?
1967.
With
Terry Sawchuk. Jack King Cook was the GM. This is the first expansion years. Yeah.
Holy crap.
They just had a thing last year, the 50th anniversary, or 2 years ago, and all the old cats that were still around got to do a big thing, and Gretzky was down there and bought them all. Like, he's like, where's the wine? Oh, we don't have any wine, Wayne. Bring them cases of wine, 15 cases of the best wine, and put it on the Gretzky tab. Like, hockey stories that you just like, what a cool thing. And then he played for the Rangers and then for the Blues as well.
So three NHL teams?
Three NHL teams for 7 years. 10 years, yeah.
What was it like growing up with a famous dad?
You don't realize it at the time.
Is that right?
You don't.
It's even just, in Canada?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's just your dad.
Right.
Like, what's the... I literally remember being at a practice facility for the Rangers. I think it was they used to train in Manhasset, New York, let's say, or something like that. Mm. And having a swarm of people around me and my dad, and literally getting like people asking me for my autograph, and I was probably 4, and signing an X, like the X.
It was just part of your world at that point.
Yeah, like you just don't like you just like hold on to your dad's, you know, leg, and then sign X. Like who? Like what? Autograph? What are you talking about? Right. But that, like, you know, I remember also being in the garden, and I was thought it was too loud. I put my little my grandma made me like a wool sweater and put the wool sweater over your eyes because it's too loud. And then when my dad is skating down there, I scream, "Dad, Dad, Dad!" And he's not hearing me and he's not looking. And just be like, why wouldn't my dad look up? He's on a breakaway to score a goal, but he's not looking at his 4-year-old kid going, Dad.
Right.
I literally remember that about Madison Square Garden. I remember where I was. As a matter of fact, I had my 25th anniversary to the day in Madison Square Garden in 2015. I started in 1990, October 2nd.
What, in wrestling?
Wrestling.
And then, so what?
And then October 2nd, 2015. So my first match was October 2nd, 1990.
Yeah.
Pinoca, Alberta. My 25-year anniversary, same day, there's a show at Madison Square Garden. Exact same day. Like 25 years to the day.
Wow.
And I had a big thing where I had a bunch of guys in the front row that I kind of had started with and blah, blah, blah. And I remember looking like right there up like in the top zone is where I was sitting when I was like – sad that my dad didn't look up at me when he was on a breakaway. Like those, I remember literally where I was sitting.
You're looking for a movie moment for your dad to be on the breakaway. Give you just a quick Kurt Swan Superman wink as he was charging
thumbs up
to his
as
goal.
He scores with the other hand. Right?
Meanwhile, as he's doing that, he's getting fucking plowed into the boards.
Like Dave Schultz.
They're fucking trained though, man. Like they're like those British guards, like in front of the palace. They never look up.
No.
I've never seen a hockey player like I
or
connect.
If you're looking up, you're in the zone, man. You're like, it's like being an actor. Like you're acting. You and me are acting, but there's 17 other guys around and the people are filming. And you don't even acknowledge that.
Right.
Like your zone, your game face is you're looking at whatever it is that your final goal is, which is scoring or whatever it may be. So, but at the time, you don't realize that.
How many kids you got?
I have 3.
Are any of them at the age to be like, why didn't he look at me as he jumped from the turnbuckle?
No, because my kids are
body slams.
Kids are, I don't know what your daughter probably thinks of the world now, but when she was growing up, like kids don't really care. Like they don't really get it right now. You know, once in a while they'll get it like, you know, oh, so-and-so wants an autograph. But now all their friends know me too. Remember Paul McCartney said once, like when he goes back to Liverpool, it's like, oh, there's McCartney going to the fucking grocery store, or like whatever. But when he first started going back, he's like, McCartney, autograph, picture. And now it's like, oh yeah, I saw Paul, like, you know, spreading manure on his flowers. And it's like, it's kind of, you know, whatever. It's kind of like an old guy or whatever. You know, all that stuff, it's all relative to where you are. You know, like I said, like my kids, like I think it's cool that they don't get it yet. Right. And I didn't get it either at that age. But now I get it. Like, I YouTube Ted Irvin, Ted Irvin fights, Ted Irvin goals, Ted Irvin interview, Ted Irvin this, Ted Irvin that, because it's all accessible now.
Right.
And I'll send it to my dad. Like, I didn't even know this existed. Because when you grew up in the 70s, you never watched your stuff because you couldn't. Like, what do you do? Like, you're gonna.
Well, first off, they didn't even have fucking VHSs in the 70s.
No, like, it would play and it's gone.
Right.
Or it would come out on in a newspaper. No one's cutting it out. But now, to me, it's really special because my dad is part of an era that doesn't exist. And also, all those guys that I idolized and you idolized, like Gretzky and Messier and all those guys, they'll go, Ted Irvin, like, fuck, that guy's a killer, man.
Because he was famous to them because he was doing it before they were doing
it. And he was the original power four that would score 20 goals a year and get 300 minutes in penalties and beat your fucking ass and then score a goal, which if he existed now would probably be making $10 million a year.
That's true. That's true. Verified fucking skills, man.
Yeah. It's just times change. But those guys respected him. I respected those guys. And therefore, I went, wow. Gretzky knows who my dad is?
That's got to feel good.
Well, maybe I should look more into this guy that's my dad, right? So it's cool for me because I know your dad has passed away. Mm. But on my podcast, I've had my dad on a couple times.
He's like, been a guest?
Oh, yeah. Because his stories are like different world shit.
Did he ever play Gordy?
Yeah. Fucking, he said, I had a...
Do you think Gordy was dirty?
Well, Gordy said to me once, you know the Gordy Howe hat trick, right?
Yeah.
A goal,
an assist, and a fight.
And it was 2002. It was an all-star game, and they had celebrities versus all-stars. And I remember I just bought a new pair of elbow pads, and I was putting them on, and Gordy was like kind of the guest coach or whatever. You know, right. He's like, hey, those are nice elbow pads. Oh, thanks, Gordy. You know what's missing from them? What? Teeth marks.
Nah.
You know, he hit someone in the face.
Oh, he's face washing, motherfuckers.
Yeah, just punch him in the face, yeah.
All right, so back to the wrestling thing. So what is the league called?
All Elite Wrestling.
AEW.
Yes, AEW, exactly. And we're talking about a company, like I said, it's got the backing, it's got the talent, it's got the TV deal. It's the first time maybe ever that you're seeing a startup company that has all of the elements that you need to really become something special and become a viable alternative to the WWE. It's not a competition. WWE is the watermark.
Right.
But what if there was an option, a choice for people that go, maybe we don't like the WWE way of doing things, or maybe we just want to see something different. And I think that's what we have to offer with all of these different elements. Like I said, TV, talent, and finances, which nobody has had before.
When does it launch, or when's the first match?
We start May 25th in Las Vegas, and we sold the MGM Grand out in 4 minutes, 12,000 tickets in 4 minutes. Boom. So there's a buzz for it because we haven't seen it like this in a long time, if ever.
That means you're going to go back in the ring?
Yeah. I'm in the main event, or I was in the main event, depending on when you air. This is me versus Kenny. So it's funny because it's two guys from Winnipeg. We headlined the Tokyo Dome last year, and now we're headlining the inaugural show for AEW. Two skid Winnipeggers. You know, like I said, it's a very, very cool time frame for us to be able to do this at the highest of levels. We're both from Winnipeg. Come on, man.
That's fucking dope. Canadian kids.
Couple Canadian.
Building the next fucking reality for the world of wrestling.
Yeah, man. So
that is dope, man. That's fucking history in the making right in there. All right,
here we go.
This is history in the past. We don't get to where we are today unless we see this movie as kids. Me and Jericho.
Do you know where we're at right now? I know where we're at.
We are at the 56 minute mark. Throwing jocks. The kids are being, the jocks are distributed by Buttermaker. We're right at the top of that scene. Things are turning around for the Bears. Hopefully you've gone and listened to the first half on Talk.
Go back again and do it now.
But here we go. We've got 48 minutes left or something like that, 45 minutes left. And pressing play. Rudy just got handed his jock. what is his name? Reggie just got handed his jock.
And Reggie.
Tanner got his. Ogilvy got his. And now, boom, They're giving, everybody starts giving.
Little Mexican's like, no me huevos.
His religion. He's not allowed to learn because he's Catholic.
I love randomly that also too that Ogilvy has no shirt on.
It is, I guess, very 70s thing.
A little
right?
sex symbol right there.
Like, I'm just going to walk. Look at the.
Hetfield, Harpo Marx.
I'm available shirt wore by Engelberg is.
I'm available.
Fairly genius. That's and great. Ahead of its time.
Oh my goodness. So the thing is, and this, I remember like, listen, you have to wear. There's no option. Like, why would these guys be throwing the? Why is it embarrassing to wear an athletic supporter?
Well, what is it meant to do?
It covers your balls.
But I mean, I've worn one once. I think like it's cloth. It doesn't do that much.
No. It's cloth with a plastic.
So you gotta put the cup thing in.
That's the cup. Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. But if you get hit in the ball bag with a puck, and you don't have a cup on, you're going down.
Right.
So if I'm not wearing one. A man is not wearing one. If a man is not wearing one, Kelly Leek's not wearing one. This is his introduction to being on the team.
Right.
Now Kelly's on the team.
Kelly is our anti-hero, the Han Solo of this bitch.
Good call.
You know what I'm saying? And this is a year before Han Solo was Han Solo.
Wow. Yeah.
I know I like to say that this movie shaped a lot of movies, and some people might argue, but I don't think you can, man.
Like, you say that the Kelly Leek's a direct descendant of Han Solo, the precursor?
Gotta be. The original anti-hero.
I wonder if Mike Ritchie went and watched Star Wars as he was thinking about this movie.
No way.
Here's the great part. The celebratory banquet at McDonald's or Pizza Hut or Denny's or whatever you
this
want.
This looks real, doesn't it?
It's very real. You still wear your outfit.
I remember that from Little League.
Yeah, and you go, and when you win, you're super excited and you get to go eat hamburgers. Like that, when you're a kid, that's the holy grail.
It's magical.
There's nothing better than that, right?
I remember going on the opposing team, like they won. And they took me with them to Stymies, the
traitor.
Ice cream baller. I know, but it was awesome, free ice cream. See this guy right here?
Who's that guy?
Fletch's, the lawyer in Fletch.
He's that guy.
He's that guy. He reps Fletch's wife, who we never meet, and Fletch, the divorce lawyer who's waiting for him in the back window, also directed by Michael Ritchie. But I know he's in another Michael Ritchie movie as well, so Michael Ritchie loved this guy.
We would call these guys when I was growing up, of that guy. Oh, it's that guy.
He's definitely
like, there's
that guy.
10 that guys in Kiss Me's the Phantom. There's 10 that guys like in every episode of like The Love Boat and Fantasy Island, Fletch, whatever it may be.
And this was their second win, and it was a forfeit.
I think. Oh, yes. Yeah, so the first one happened when Kelly Leek came on the scene.
Yeah.
Second one was a forfeit. Now it's Kelly and Tatum. Look at this. Nothing says teenage love.
They're
like
also
this.
Not being towed, bro.
Yeah, and there's
you
no.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, no, that's helmet. Not, they're actually driving.
And I think that was her on the back.
It was. There's no helmets. There's nothing. Here's a sliding practice. Good job by Hetfield.
Go, Jersey.
Good job by Groucho Marx Jr. And shitty job by Fatso Fat Shaming Engelbert.
There it is, man. That was my childhood right there.
But did he have to
boob
be
shaking
spaz all
right
the time?
To the ground? Fuck yeah, we can't do anything else.
By the way, can we just comment on something? We can't say the line, but I have to say, it's one of the greatest moments in cinematic history that you cannot repeat. This team is made up with nothing but
when
sons
Tanner
of, sons
breaks it all down.
Yeah. It's so it's, bad.
You gotta remember this is a very triggered generation.
I will say the PC version of it. There's Jewish guys, Italians, Black Americans, African Americans,
Latinos,
homosexuals, and a booger-eating mentally challenged person.
Yes, and that's the kindest way you could get away with it.
It's so bad, like you cannot say that line, but when he says it, it's so genius. I think that happened in the last half of the.
You think about it too, like when that played in theaters, people were like, "Whoa,
right?"
Like, as opposed to like, we got to shut this theater,
right?
Down.
Like we talked about this in the first half on Talk Is Jericho, the power of the N-word. In the 70s and in 2019, it's still very similar.
Yeah.
And it was really like they just used it like no problem. 9-year-old kids saying it.
In an almost all in the family Archie Bunkerish way.
Right.
And you got to remember, this was a PG rated movie.
I'm not sure what the actual rating was.
I'm pretty sure it was PG. It's definitely not G, and they didn't get an R because nobody really curses. But it was a PG movie, which you know, there was no PG-13 back in the day. So it got, I guess, the rating that made most sense at the time. But it's crazy when you watch this movie to think, like, this was for, you know, like, anyone could go so long as they had a parent with them.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
You know, it's not even, like, restricted to anyone under 18. The parents could drop you off to go watch this.
Right.
And these kids were not role models.
They were not. They're terrible kids.
It's probably because of movies like this that eventually we got to the 80s version of
movies. I also love the fact, like, that
we got to clean this up.
At the ballet scene, that Engelbert just has to walk in with a bucket KFC.
Oh my God.
Which was Kentucky Fried Chicken at the time, kids.
Yeah, they didn't. There was no KFC. They were flat out telling you what it was, what was in that bucket of death. But that looks like the 70s to me. I know they still put chicken in buckets, but that particular version just screams like
my. And he's and Kelly Leak's like, yeah, I play for the Bears. I'm hitting 800 right now. She's like,
you Cougar know, Hunter.
Super old.
Look at this kid, man.
Like, he's got a comb over already. What chance did he have? Talk about Jackie Earle Haley, the great Jackie Earle Haley we talked about earlier. He actually had an Oscar nomination for Little Children.
Little Children.
And this was his first movie role.
Do you remember him from, he was in a Tom Cruise movie called Losing It?
Oh, yeah, totally.
With him and, was it Shelley Long?
83?
Yeah.
One of those old wacky kind of
it was after TNA movies. Breaking Away, a couple years after Breaking Away, and one of the last movies before he kind of
he disappeared off. And we talked about on the last episode that he was found driving a limo for the Sean Penn movie that led to Little Children.
Mm. The you think about it, man. This is a flick that tells kids it's okay to hate other kids, because these kids are never at any point discouraged. Oh, there he is. There's Walter.
Oh, there he is. Kid. What does he go for the bathroom? Go to the bathroom for you too. He looks like total math out.
Like he also looks like he's 20.
He's like 9 feet tall.
So yeah, he's on the athletics. But so, this like no at no point is there ever like no there were no note sessions, no studio exec was ever like, you got to put in a moment where the adult says, like, that's not okay to
nothing.
Say think those things.
There's no adult supervision in this movie whatsoever, except for minimal from Boilermaker.
Bob Whitewood at the end when he's like, hey, don't drink that. That's the most apparent intervenes in this.
And can picture. I just say, at this point in time, this is when Buttermaker tells Kelly Leak to, like, make sure he win. And Kelly's, like, taking all the fly balls and doing all the work. And when he doesn't do the work and lets Stein do it, Stein screws it up, and the whole team turns against him.
Yeah.
They hate him now.
You were a sports kid growing up?
Mm.
Is that likely or unlikely? Is that a fake part of this movie?
No.
Does that ring untrue? I know if I'm on the Bears and fucking he's smoking around and catching everything and we're getting closer to the championship.
A hog.
I know he's ball hogging, but I'm like, thank you, because I suck. So I'm glad you're doing
it. We would call him a puck hog, but I played baseball. It was more about hockey. I don't think you'd be that mad where you would just snub him.
Right.
Because obviously he's winning. And like, okay, I'm so sick of this guy. He's the best guy on the team, but we're winning.
Yeah, that's what I would
say. So whatever, right? Because even Buttermaker said, you got the championship. That's what you wanted, isn't it? Like, what are you complaining about? You want to win, right?
Lots of silent shots of children looking confused.
Yeah, exactly. Follow that. Yeah. Sadly,
yeah,
confused.
And not even heartbroken, just like, and not mockingly, but this look on their faces of like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Do you realize this is just a fucking game?
Well, yeah, and then we see, like, you know, Leak just totally just like he's little bitch fit, like, Buttermaker yelled at him, so now he's just standing there. And we see a lot of this in this movie.
Look at him roughing this kid up.
Dude, the kid's
like shoving him with his hands on
him.
He's
so small.
Yeah.
He's like the big, like, I'm wondering what the casting director thought about putting him. Yeah, he's a badass, but why not put like Matt Dillon in there, who was taller and looked tough and looked crazy? This is a little runt. You could kick him like across the street.
76. I don't even know if Matt Dillon's old
enough. He might not be. But
well, you know what? Hold on. I'm wrong. He was in, remember Over the Edge?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I fucking love that movie.
That was probably 78. 90,
yeah, it's got to be. So that makes
sense. Okay, what about Jimmy McNichol?
Oh, shit.
You could have stuck him in there. Scott Baio, why not? Jimmy Baio was in the second one. You can put Scott in there. Point being, Kelly's great, but he's super small.
Yeah.
He's not really intimidating.
But they give him the, I mean, it's all in the performance, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
He's got also, he's not being a bully, but I mean, he just has to be threatening enough to a bunch of kids who are smaller than him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Younger.
But he, so. But yeah, younger, because he's not very big to all these guys.
Like Ogilvy's got him by a couple.
Oh, and so does, you know, Hetfield's got him. This might be James Hetfield. He grew up in this area of the country in 76.
That simple shot of a passerby patting Buttermaker on the yeah. back and him being filled with pride. Like,
everyone's mad.
A lesser writer like me would write a whole 9 pages of dialogue about that moment. In one visual shot, in one visual cue, they conveyed the story far better.
A lesser writer. Bill Lancaster is definitely your bester in this one.
He was from the world of Little League. He grew up in it, and he also still worked around it when he wrote this.
I can't imagine Burt Lancaster, his dad, coaching Little League.
No.
Because apparently Matho is based on him and whatever. This scene is pretty crazy because this is another Buttermaker heel turn.
One of the most important scenes in cinematic history as far as I'm concerned.
Wow, explain.
Well acted as well. This is betrayal, though. Some of that adult betrayal we're talking about. She's being the mature one in this moment. And this guy throws a hissy fit, throws beer at her and stuff just because she's saying things he doesn't want to hear. Like, that is the most childish, infantile reaction one can
right.
have. And he's the adult and she's the child. Throw on top of that, it's heartbreaking. You can tell she's reaching out. She needs somebody. Clearly there's a hole, an absence in her life. And she has this commonality with baseball, with Buttermaker. Hey, he sought her out, for Christ's sakes. Hey, she's real important and stuff. Hey, they hang out even when they're not playing the game. But as the season's coming to a close, you can sense, she can sense, like, maybe
he's using me.
Maybe I'm more into this than he is, so she yeah. wants to solidify plans, because when the season's over, she doesn't want to see him disappear like he had before. So she starts talking about the future, and Buttermaker is the character that he is. Clearly, he's not been married and shit, so future is something he doesn't think about mm-hmm. very often, and it's a weak spot for him. So mm-hmm. even though up till now he's been relatable and kind of curmudgeonly but lovable, this is the turn where suddenly you're like, oh. Like, adults can be shitty.
But it's also a sad state of affairs because, like you said, like, she, obviously, they're not in a relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, but
they're in love. It's a love story.
Yeah, it's a love story. It's not boyfriend, girlfriend. It's not romantic. She sees him as
the father figure,
as her hero. He sees
look
her.
Bam!
Look at that. He throws a beer at her.
You couldn't do that today.
What a fucking asshole. Like, once again, this is so far. How far are we into the movie? We're like an hour.
And 10.
And once we hate Buttermaker again after he's become a good guy so many times, right?
He has a turn here.
The parallels is the word I was looking for before. There's a parallel between the two.
She's like fucking shirks it off.
Dude, he fucks her off like you would say to a girl, get out.
Mm-hmm. Or but a guy.
Yeah, it's a 12-year-old girl. Like, she looks up to him and he doesn't care and he's embarrassed and pissed off about it.
Now watch this. Michael Ritchie going to go around her. They don't cut. They hold on her,
Great point.
Get to here and then you're going to see she'd been crying.
Yeah.
She held it. She didn't give him the satisfaction.
That's where she makes her 350-plus points right there.
And then, nice. And then Matthau has his own fucking teary moment.
Yeah.
Like, where he too is like, God, I'm a piece of shit.
And keeps drinking his freaking beers.
Well, that's how you fucking, how do you get over a moment like that where you just fucking threw beer into the face of this little angel that saved your fucking ass?
But why would he do that? He's so bitter to the world. Like, she didn't do shit to him.
Because he don't want to be what she wants. Yeah. Like, that's asking an individual to grow up. Look at that little shade that fucking Cleveland throws. Fuck Kelly, just looking at him with disdain.
No one likes Kelly, even the next day. Let's do a three-way. Nope. Stein says, go fuck your ass.
And when you've lost Rudy Stein,
I can understand Tanner and Whitewood, but when you lost Rudy Stein,
Tanner's an emotional dynamite. He's up, down. You don't know where you are.
Once again, the windshield is still broken there, by the
running,
way.
A great running gag. Yeah. He just never fucking never
fixes it.
But that scene, man, where he fucking, or she walks away, they don't ever make that right. The closest they get is like, hey, Buttermaker, maybe next year you'll teach me to do this pitch. And he's like, you betcha. And that's it. There's no, I'm so sorry.
You're
for
right.
What
There's
I did.
Never like, how about tomorrow?
Yeah.
And why don't you call your mom? Because we didn't hear it. It might have happened. Oh, no, it happened before when she literally organized a date between her mom, who obviously hates Buttermaker for being a slob. She finally acquiesces and said, okay, I will go out with this Buttermaker guy. And she tells him this, and he denies not just her mom, but her as well.
Yeah.
What a dick.
It's a total dick move.
Such a dick.
And at first he's like, yeah, we'll see. But then he gets more definite as she goes on, instead of just like kind of shining her on about the future, which he easily could have been like, yeah, totally. Let's do that. He starts telling her that that's not really the way it's going to be.
And what's the word he said, next year, not next year? Oh, do
you? What do you think? If I wanted to hang out with you, if I wanted to look, I would have looked up to you 2 years ago. I wouldn't have waited 2 goddamn years.
He says 2 years ago. I would look up 2 years ago. I wouldn't have waited 2 years.
Here we got
Vic Morrow
as Roy Turner giving this fucking deadly serious speech to his team, where he's just like, "You're the ones. If you lose." You got to live with this.
I don't want to talk about winning. I want to talk about losing.
A speech you would never give a bunch of children. But boy, he gives it. And here are the fun-loving fucking Bears.
She goes Bell Bonds.
Jumping out there. And the fact, everything's going to change in this act, folks.
Yeah.
We've got, like, let's see, how many minutes left? 28 minutes.
But so this is great.
A true third act.
20 minutes for the whole last game. Like, they really put some time into this. I noticed that this morning.
They let
it's not like they go through semifinals. Like, the final game is the crux of the movie.
It's the final game is almost the length of a real Little League
game.
Yeah. Like about
and you're
hour.
Literally sitting, because a lot of times you go, ball one, ball two. I'm like, couldn't they have just said, like, walk?
But and they're now, mind you, the journey that the Bears have taken, while being unlikely, is thrilling. We've watched them go in the ranks from the bottom to the playoffs against the greatest team in the league, the Yankees. This is improbable. It shouldn't happen. And it doesn't happen if shit like, you know, the forfeit with the one team hadn't happened earlier and shit like that.
And then and this is right here where Tatum gets the New York action. I know I don't got a lot up there, but what I got don't feel too good.
She
gets spiked and there's a big fucking bench clearing brawl between the kids and Tatum. Tatum basically got spiked, which means they threw the cleats up into her breasts as a 12-year-old. And now the people are pissed. There's fighting. Kelly Leak's in there. Whitewood's in there.
Would the game truly be allowed to continue after such a bench?
In the 70s, maybe now, done. Probably right? done.
You know what
done,
I'm saying? Done. Everybody gets punished.
Or the coaches would be suspended and fined and kicked out of the league or whatever. But this is also, too, when Tanner, who is basically one of the main protagonists of the show.
Also, like, did you just see that moment between those two? There was no big speech about, like,
hey,
sorry. He was just like, I could have handled those guys by myself. Yeah, I know. I didn't need your help.
I know.
Like,
but that's the piece. Like I said, Tanner is one of the lead characters on the Bears. And when Tanner says, okay, Kelly, you're cool again, finally he's cool again.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
He's us. And he gets
Exactly. He cares,
to
right?
Like him.
He stood up for his bro.
Here we've got Roy Turner's kid, Joey, and he's going to catch some shit from his dad. And they thread this needle really well in a way that other movies stole from it forever. Three bites at this apple where they're, you know, you see him kind of getting pissed or first like concern, hey, Billy or Joey, and then, hey, Joey, and then you get to the big showdown moment, which is fucking
coming up soon.
And it's
hard to watch.
It is. But at the same time, like in that era, I grew up in that era. I was never like slapped around by my parents. I got spanked or whatever, but like, corporal punishment wasn't a no-no when I was growing up, but I lived in a world where you saw adults like fucking smack children, the kids, yeah. And not even their own children.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was always so mind bending.
Yeah, I had a coach that was like that.
That fucking coaches could do shit like
that's
that.
Right. And coaches could do it, and if you were at your friend's house, your friend's parents could do it.
Yes,
you can't do that now.
No, and but in this movie, you see him fucking one of our main characters, fucking Buttermaker himself. Jostle, shake up, throw beer at children, throw clothes at children. But he don't beat
Turner.
Roy Turner. Turner makes full fucking contact.
Huge contact. And there's an actual smacks like, psh!
What did the five fingers say to the face kind of moment?
Right, exactly.
You've got moments here between the two coaches yelling at each other. There's been civility, although fucking Roy Turner's always looked down his nose at Buttermaker and the Bears. But it just devolves into flat-out name-calling.
Right.
This was a huge moment when I was a kid, too, because I didn't understand sports, but I was like, what do you mean? And my dad was like, he's telling him to let the ball hit him. But I was like, ew, why would you do that? And he's like, because that'll get him on base.
Right.
That, too, bent my brain a little bit. Like,
in what
way?
Why
would an adult tell a child that? Even as a kid, I knew that was like, that's not. Why would you, as an adult, tell a kid to get hit by
a ball? Yeah, I get that. But to me, too, is also like, I mean, it was like it's a famous story of Bobby Clark in the 1972
Russia versus Canada.
And Bobby's coach told him, he said, go break that fucking guy's leg, whatever the guy's name was that was scoring all these goals. And Clark's like, figuratively or literally, he's like, no, go break his leg. And Bobby Clark went out there and slashed him and broke his leg because his coach told him to. Does he feel good, bad, or indifferent? Doesn't matter. The coach said, do it. And obviously, that's a different level. But when the coaches lean into it and get hit, I was always taught when I was growing up, the coach was like your father when you weren't around.
Right.
And the strategy is to win. So Rudy didn't want to do it, but how bad was it? It stings for a bit. He got on base, right? That doesn't happen the next time.
Yeah, it's when he asks him the second time.
He doesn't want to do it.
And here you can see the slow chain of events. I mean, again, thank God they take a half an hour to let the game play out.
Right.
So that you could get shit like Engelberg giving Joey Turner some shit.
Yeah.
So that Joey's got this slow burn going on so that when the moment happens with Joey and his dad, like it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. It's a slow burn. But once again, it's a slow burn even from the start when Vic Morrow told him in the equipment room, in the first 5 minutes, like, you guys shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You should just get out now. That guy's been a dick the whole time. He's had it coming to him. The fact that, like, I always think about this, like, when his son turns on him, when he hits his son, and then the mom is involved, like, when he goes home, he's in major shit.
Come home with the championship, but his wife is like, fuck you.
Get out.
There's a version where after the credits roll, his wife left him. With the kid.
What?
Why not? Like, fucking, how do you get over something like that?
I know, but what version was that?
I'm just saying, like, at the end, there's, you know,
is there a European director's cut or what?
In my heart. There's got to be a version where Roy Turner's wife is like, that was the last straw. Fuck this asshole. Yeah. Like, who takes fucking Little League this
in
seriously?
In public, too. That's the thing. Like, where it gets.
Gig and you slapped our child.
Yeah. And we've all, you know, you have a kid. I've never slapped my kid, but there's times when you yell. And at home, but you yell in public, it gets very awkward. He slapped his kid. Yeah. No one says a word because no one knows what to say. They're super scared of him. What does Whitewood has a big speech here right now.
Toby here has the moment where he goes to Buttermaker to tell him that Amanda's arm is crapped out and she shouldn't be pitching.
And he doesn't give a shit. Once again, a terrible move by Buttermaker.
And you got to give it up for Toby's performance because his reaction, like watch when Buttermaker stops talking, he's giving him the side eye like, are you fucking shitting me? Like this guy, and oh my God.
He's good, man. He's a good actor.
And he fucking understands that, like, Jesus Christ, like, this guy's off the reservation. I'm more mature than the adult.
He's
right
the Greek
now.
Chorus. He's keeping it alive. When he tells him, listen, this girl that you should be caring about, that obviously you've had a past with her mom and
your friend.
And you asked her to come on the team, and her arm is fucked. She's hurt. And he's like, it's only 3 more rounds, blah, blah, blah. And now he's freaking out. Damn it, Stein, because Stein hit the ball when he wasn't supposed to, and Amanda's looking at him, and he throws Stein in the corner.
He throws a child across the dugout.
He's the biggest asshole right there.
And look at that heartbroken kid with his puppy dog eyes.
Giant glasses.
Yeah, this is the big turn with it, where he gives the speech. Don't you want to beat these bastards?
You're the finalists. That's what you want, isn't it?
This is the moment where, you know, you're like, oh, this is what he wants. And none of the kids
can. It's not what they want. But the thing is,
they can't figure out who the fuck this guy is.
The final redemption of Buttermaker is he realizes that that's not what the kids want. They just want to play. It goes to, let's fast forward to William Devane. Let them play. Let them play. Devane was a much better coach than Buttermaker because he just cared about the kids. Buttermaker cared about money, cared about personal pride, cared about alcohol, and didn't really know what he wanted other than the fact that now he's hurt everybody's feelings and he really gets it.
He's Ebenezer Scrooge. This team is Three Ghosts in the Night and Tiny Tim. And that's where it all fucking determined.
I want to look up how old he was.
I'm going to say
when they filmed this.
52.
I would say he's close. Well, we're getting up there too, kid. Let's see.
It's so funny because in the scene, all the kids are like, man, fuck you. Like, without saying it, they're all like bitter.
They're not angry
at him and shit. Yeah. And then when he turns around and goes, okay, we're putting all the shit kids in, they're like, wait! No!
All right, dude, you're not going to believe this much as I suspected.
All right, hold on. 1976, Walter Matthau.
He was born.
I'm saying 52.
How old are you right now?
48.
How old am I right now? 48. He was born in 1920.
Yeah.
This is 1976/75.
46 years old?
What?
46?
46, 45.
He looks at least.
He's 10 younger
years
than
older.
Us. And that goes to what we were saying earlier. People get older earlier than they do now.
Yeah.
He's younger than us.
No.
There than we are now. And he looks 20 years older.
Yeah, easily. He looks like an adult look like in movies when I was a kid.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm not even like vainly going, no, I don't look like that now.
But you
but
don't.
I just don't.
You
neither
don't.
Do you. It's like,
you don't.
That's not what an old man, that's not what a 46-year-old looks like now.
He looks way older. It's ridiculous, right?
How strange, man. I would have put him 6 years older than that.
But I just, the way that the 70s were, I figured he was probably our age or younger.
I wonder if he was a hard liver. Like, did he drink a lot?
I think so. Obviously, he looks like. Look at his nose. Here's the big. Here's the big thing right here. Here's the big crux. Here's the big turnaround.
It's the setup for what's about to happen, where he essentially goes over and tells his kid, you know, fucking don't throw anything for this kid to hit because last time he got hit off, mm-hmm. he got on base. So low and outside, you know, fucking that's it. And
right.
There's an 80-yard line where he's like, but dad, I wanted to strike him out. For those of us in the audience that don't follow baseball or understand that moment, they don't do a lot of idiot moves in this movie, but that one was
then he
idiot.
Throws a pitch that like almost hits
one
head.
One of the greatest, like, that's not a special effect. There's no CG ball.
Right. He throws the ball at his head.
And Engelberg literally drops and almost gets hit.
And here comes Morrow, and he just fucking whacks him right there. Boom.
Brandon Cruz said he
dead
literally
Kennedys.
Hit him. It wasn't a...
Wow.
He did get him right to the field. It wasn't a movie hit. He's like, he struck me.
And Jello Biafra, years later, used that for...
Jello Biafra, what a great fucking pull.
For inspiration of the dead Kennedys. And look at this. Now, Vic Morrow, and I love his acting. I'm not going to say he's the greatest actor. I don't know much about him. But he plays this so well. Like, everybody's quiet. He just hit his kid at center on the pitcher's mound. Super silent. He knows he fucked up, but he still feels he's right. Almost killed that kid. He almost killed that kid.
She looks about 10 years younger than him.
She does?
Yeah.
Look, there's those pants. Like, I love those pants. They should bring those pants back.
That is like, let me see. He's like, you put him at about 10, 11.
Should we look
at Brandon Cruz?
Okay, yeah.
Joey Turner?
Yeah.
That is not what my mom looked like when I was 10 or 12 years old.
but let me tell you something crazy though, and this is not any kind of braggadocious information. My mom did. My
she
mom looked,
that looked
like that. My mom was really a good looking lady with those like 70s clothes. If you wore them right, you would look like that. My mom looked like that. That's why I always like this, because she reminds me kind of my mom. My dad wasn't an evil tyrant who was going to punch me, but I always like get a little bit of comfort because my mom passed away in 2005. Mm. So like I see this and it reminds me of my mom in the 70s, which
that's
is fucking, a comforting feeling, right?
That's beautiful, right?
Yeah, man.
It's definitely the one of the support columns of a happy childhood, this movie.
Yeah.
Engelberg gets to essentially go run the base. Now, this is a controversial point for me.
What?
Because I get upset by the end of this movie. Not upset, but like, you know, fucking every time I'm like, God, I hope the Bears win this time. But of course, every time.
Right.
Spoilers, that don't happen. But they wouldn't have even gotten as close as they got were it not for this moment right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because he held the ball.
Turner held the ball.
And let fucking a run up.
Right.
Like, in the real world, the Bears don't even get close.
They're done.
There is no, yeah.
Which is why I think that Buttermaker
powerfully fucked his father. He's like, this will truly fuck. You want to slap me? Fuck you.
Like 20 years from now, they're going to remember this. And then he walks off and there's his mom. And here's what I love. Because we're all mother's boys, right? He walks right past his mom. And then he stops and waits. Come on, mom. And she walks. Like, listen, honestly, we're guys. Look at that fucking ass and those crazy pants. I love 70s pants. And then mom and dad, mom and kid walk off and he's left alone with nothing.
I want to write a scene of what happened next. You know what I'm saying? Like, do the scene like of them drive home. She takes him to McDonald's. Definitely.
Good call.
And fucking like just goes, you know, your dad is... And tries to make excuses for him, but tell him that he was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe as the kid says something like fucking profound to the point where by the end of that meal, she's like, I'm leaving this asshole. Like the kid goes to the bathroom and, well, he can't do the cell phone call because cell phone's still.
She goes to the payphone.
She goes to the payphone.
Yeah. You know, I love the fact that you said that you just epitomized the 70s. She took him to McDonald's.
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, like when you went to McDonald's when you were a kid, it was an event.
It's the currency of
you just, yeah, you just didn't go there like on the way home from like, you know, work or whatever. Like you would get one every couple weeks at best.
Controversial moment here because this is where Buttermaker, you know, kind of fucks any chances of the team winning. And Lupus has his big moment where he's like, I don't know about you, but I want to win, so don't put me in. And, you know, Buttermaker's like, Lupus, you didn't come to this life to sit on a dugout.
You didn't come to this life to sit on a bench, did you? No, then get your ass out there.
Do the best you can.
I love the fact that Buttermaker, in looking at Turner.
I'm like, are you serious? I'm Lupus.
But I'm named after a disease. You understand this? But
look at him run. Look at the joy of childhood.
He really feels that, like, I saw what I was becoming, which is basically punching these kids and beating them up. It's not about that. And this is the last Buttermaker turn. Yeah. Now he's a good guy. He turned heel, good guy. Now he's finally a good guy to the point where I love this point with Whitewood. It's like
he's going to shave off half his mustache and stick it up his
left nostril. Like Lupus is in there. Well, yes, he hasn't played yet. Well, everybody has to play. In Buttermaker's world from now on, everybody's playing because that's what it's all about.
To be fair, that's what he was fucking
right.
Hired
he said,
for.
You put this team together so the boys could play, not so that just one or two guys could play. And that's that
and
insult.
Bob Whitewood is like, little boys hurt when he's getting right up in his face.
That's hurt easily.
That's our fucking friends.
I love his terrible insult. I'm going to shave off half your mustache and shove it up. I was like, what is that?
It catches him, too. I want to point out something I've never noticed what? Until this screening. The Bears fan section of parents all wearing yellow in honor of the kids' team, I would assume. It's not like
they also said that this – color scheme of white and yellow was unlike any other in the Major League Baseball. All the other kids had teams that colors like Yankees. Yankees.
So they created a color
they created this color scheme because no big teams had it.
No right-thinking team would put their players in piss yellow is what you're saying?
He said mustard yellow, piss yellow. And
has
I love,
anybody done it since?
I don't think so.
I guess they do own this configuration, don't
they? Well, the Winnipeg Piss Yellows didn't last very long. They played 98 to 97.
Prairie League.
Yeah. But I love, once again, Amanda gets pulled to put in Rudy Stein, who at the beginning of the movie we have led to believe is the worst pitch of the world.
Oh, believe me, it hasn't improved.
And, of course, still hits like he hasn't learned a fucking thing.
He needs a cutoff, man.
He's still terrible.
Just to get the fucking pitch to the plate.
Yeah.
And as, you know, the Carmen soundtrack, composed by Jerry Fielding, I think it is.
Oh, wow.
Plays in the background. We watched the Bears unravel. And even as a kid, I was with them. I was like, come on, man. Fucking no. We could win this. But the beauty is they almost win it even with the dregs.
At a disadvantage.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about it, is that once again, we're learning about winning and losing. And also that, listen, everybody deserves a shot.
Yes.
Right? And even I coached my daughter's floor hockey league this year, and there's certain players, and you start thinking like, I'm turning into Buttermaker. Mm-hmm. Like, don't ever, like, no, dude, they're kids. They need to learn how to play. What is it more important to win with three people or to lose with 10? It's important to lose with 10 because that's how you learn how to play and learn the, you know, it's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Can I write a little more Bears fan fiction here?
Please.
So they just had a moment where Cleveland was sitting there talking to Roy Turner, and she's like, looks like you got this all sewn up. Yep. And he's like, yeah. There's Lupus's big moment.
Great moment.
Very rare cinematic moment in this movie.
Yeah.
Where, you know, oh, of course he caught the ball. Like, which everything else about the Bears, pretty damn authentic. They present them as they would be in real life. Mm-hmm. But that lucky catch is movie magic. That would never happen to the Bears in real life, but it's movie magic.
Well, let me say this, though. Have you seen that recent video that's going around with the little kid who's trying to kick he's trying to karate kick a wooden board?
Yes.
And he can't do it, and he's crying, and he can't do it, and he tries, and the third time he tries, and it breaks. Listen, we're cinema auteurs. Was it real? Was it not? That reminds me of the Bad News Bears. Yeah. That's Lupus. Like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm going to cry. I'm going to, I fucking caught it. What? And that leads to the last minute resurgence of the Bears here, who now are losing, was it 7-3? But now they're slowly creeping back up. Now Ogilvy has to go up with his stats and his bare chest. Sexy fucking Ogilvy. To try and
he
get on base.
He was the guy that taught me when I went to Little League, oh, you could walk.
Right.
Like, I can't hit, but, you know, if I get, Rudy Stein taught me I could be hit by the ball and make it on base.
Ogilvy's like, who got the bunt? Who was the bunter? Was it one of the Mexican
That's
kids?
A mod where he's just like, Ahmad, this one's for Allah, sucker. It's going out way out there. And he fucking faked him out. Look at the Ogilvy, so scared to hit the plate.
Super, he's terrified.
It's harder now to brain at Ogilvy. Just put it over. He ain't swinging.
So, but it's like when you played Little League Baseball, probably to this day, all of these players are cliched players. There's the bully who's yelling at you. There's the catcher who's mumbling under his breath. There's the other team's coach who's like, oh, it's an easy hit.
This is, I think this is how I learned to interact with adults and how I interact with children because of this movie. I was always very frank with my kid growing up. We didn't hide vulgarity from her or anything like that. My point was like, this house is built on cursing, so am I gonna hide it from her? Sure. Right. She needs to learn from a very young age that if you curse well, you can make quite a healthy living. And I think that's informed by this movie, because he was always so fucking frank with the kids. Like, my parents were my parents. But they weren't, like, there she is, Cleveland again. And I got to get back to my fan fiction.
You love Cleveland there.
I think she's amazing. I'm going to go back to my fan
fiction. Can you go to fan fiction? What is it?
There's her and Roy Turner.
Right.
Roy Turner has this incredibly hot wife.
Right.
But doesn't Roy Turner also, he spends a lot of time with Cleveland.
Yeah.
They're two peas in a pod. Don't you think there's a world where, like, he fucked her in in the equipment shed or whatever?
She wants him to leave his bitch wife that doesn't understand the brilliance of Roy Turner.
She appreciates. Yeah. Every aspect
kids
of
need
Roy.
To be ruled with an iron hand.
Yes,
you did everything right, Roy.
I'm telling you, the real Bad News Bears TV show, you can get into that.
Can we bring back
there
Mino?
It is
can
this
we,
one's, oh, this
can
one's
we bring
Allah
back Saga. Mino Peluche? This was for Allah Saga.
Yeah, man, think about it. Like, there's a lot of chemistry there.
There is, you know.
And he seems like a young guy with cheese
and Cleveland is throughout the whole movie. She's ethereal, like, she's everywhere.
And yeah. She, look at her. She's like, what?
Great 70s outfit, the visor.
They're turning it around. She called them marshmallows. I can't.
You know what I love?
What's this
little Mexican kid's name?
Oh, I don't know.
Whichever one
Miguel?
He is. Miguel. He really compacts his body to make sure he walks. And like, let me say, one of my favorite moments in Bad News Bears Breaking Training is when all the kids are trying to get money from their parents. And now the two little Mexican kids are in the same house. They're not in the same house in this movie.
Right.
They're different kids, but now they live together. Apparently, right. They were both adopted. And it's like whatever was in Spanish, or if they speak English, like, we want $5. And the kid goes, each. to go to Houston for 2 weeks or whatever it was. We want $5.
Each. Now, this is it. This is the moment? No. Yes, this is it. Bases loaded.
Walk him.
Kelly Leak up at bat.
Yeah, walk Kelly Leak. Intentional walk.
And Buttermaker's calling it out.
And then, Turner says something like, yeah, he can't even run a grocery store. Never mind run a baseball team.
Can't manage
a
grocery store. He's going to
When has he ever managed a grocery store? We've never seen that part of Boilermaker.
So dismissive of another adult to the really other such a dick, two man. Children.
I mean, yeah.
Like, crazy disrespectful. this kid has come in, I think, Billy, to replace Joey Turner pitching.
Mm-hmm. Does a good job.
Surrogate son at this point.
Man, yeah, good call. Good call.
Because he's like, my boy abandoned me.
But yeah, my son hates me, but I love you.
There's Buttermaker. My son hates me, but I love you. Buttermaker is indicating that he should reach for it. Like, they're going to try to walk you, so fucking.
Jump up and hit it. And Kelly Leak listens to his coach and watch what he does.
Here it is.
Jumps out, whacks it.
He's got full wood on the bat.
Boom.
Beautiful fucking shot, Roy.
Right.
If only it went over that fence.
Yeah, but it did not, though, Kevin. It's an infield home run.
So, bam, Ogilvy.
One's in.
Ogilvy's in.
Ogilvy gets the run.
Ahmad's in. Oh,
Ahmad Rashad
then
gets in there.
Then Miguel.
$5
must
each.
Have got in. And then.
He gets it. Here goes Kelly. And out. There's no drama. In modern day filmmaking, you'd be like, and.
There it is. And look. He's the fucking out. Music drops. Bam. Awesome. Bam, bam. And the kids are just crestfallen. Nobody's crying. Nobody's fucking screaming.
And they go right to the beer.
This is a moment that, like, I remember being a kid, and I wasn't like, holy shit, this could never happen. For some reason, the world I was in, kids did drink beer. So I never found
but
this.
But not 9-year-olds, though.
Yeah. But not like on the regular. Like, hey, I'll see you at the bar, but at like a bar.
You would go to your pool party or whatever, yeah. And your dad would give you beer.
And it's not like he did it the whole movie. It's like, hey, they almost fucking won.
Right.
Now, you know, I understand people.
It's pretty much against the law.
Yes. And I wouldn't even do it for my kid.
I understand it's against the law, but whatever.
Look at this giant trophy versus the trophy that Cleveland walks
but
out.
And here's the best line where you say that that Lupus was fed the line, Quinn, whatever his name
Hold
was.
Hold on. Even better line is it happens first. Watch this shit. Cleveland comes out with a little ass fucking trophy, and she says to Buttermaker, here's your second place trophy. Congratulations. And he goes, thank you, sir. And her fucking double take to him is fantastic.
That's great.
Look at these kids.
Stein's
man.
Giant.
And this
fucking, what a little prick. You know, Bears, we never liked you, but you got balls, so you know, whatever.
We still don't think you're any good, but you got guts. Fucking jerks.
Yeah, fucking here's where Lupus is like.
They're still nursing them beers, man. It's hysterical.
They've got beers in the line. Look at Harper Marks.
They get the cheer, the little chant.
Two, four, six, eight, every Bears, but yeah, Bears.
And then Lupus comes alive, son. Minim. Hey, Yankees.
That's Tanner.
Yeah, but as Lupus follows it up.
Yeah, take this and shove it. And Lupus goes.
He throws the trophy.
Oh, yeah, and wait till next year.
Just wait till next year.
Total fed line. Terrible acting.
And also a moment that I was like, yeah, bitch. That was the only thing that made them losing okay with me as a child. Because I was like, all right, yeah. They're going to do it again.
And we're going to see next year.
He said it. We're going to see it.
But when we saw next year, it was half the squad. Harper Marx is gone. Hetfield's gone. Well, was Hetfield in this?
Hetfield was there. Oh, I think Toby made it through all of them.
He went to Japan, too?
Look at this shot. Big old crane shot. It couldn't be a helicopter.
Here's what I love about 70s. 70s movies are great because it ends in like 30 seconds. It's done. Like a minute ago, they were still trying to get on base, and now it's done.
There's
like
the
so fast.
All right, so you look up. See, in this version, he's holding her hand. In that version, my version, he's not holding her
and
hand.
And the one that they took, apparently, he's trying to hide his beer.
Yes.
Go back to your beer.
I believe that was the name of the movie in Canada.
Joyce Van
Not the Bad News Bears. It was Go Back to Your Beer.
Walter Matthau went Go Back to
ben
Your Beer.
Ben Piazza is the great.
Jack O'Haley. Alfred Lutter. That's
that
Ogilvy. Oh, yeah.
And then the rest. Chris Barnes. is a and goddamn the rest. Fucking hero, man.
Is he still alive or did he pass away?
Deep in the credits. I heard he passed away.
Because we had
Smith, who played Lupus, said to me that he passed away. If the man I met was indeed Quinn Smith, which I don't know. Because
you know that there's a band called
Charles Mathau, The Athletics. Music theme from Carmen.
There's a death metal band called Cannibal Corpse that used to have a singer called Chris Barnes. Maybe the same guy or what?
I wonder.
I mean, Brandon Cruz could be in the Dead Kennedys. Maybe Chris Barnes can be in...
he would have been there for the birth of punk.
Birth of thrash metal.
1976, man.
Promotional considerations furnished by Denny's. Thanks to Denny's.
That was the only one they had to throw out. That's
product. You know the benefits of product placement. So Denny's was on that. So Kevin, obviously you...
God, that
I love so movies. Amazing. You are definitely a movie like expert, auteur or whatever. Where does the Bad News Bears rate for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Easily top 10.
Top 10, yeah.
Of all the movies I've ever seen in my life. Particularly for the lasting influence. Not just like, hey, this is a movie I've enjoyed many times. But realizing how deeply it runs in my fucking DNA, that it shaped me as an individual. Mm-hmm. Yes, it absolutely does. And I'll do you one step further. This, you know, the image of the poster of the Bad News Bears was Tatum O'Neill on an Apple box, you know, arguing with the Walter Mathau, her coach and stuff. This movie, when I watched Jane, Silent Bob Reboot, that reminds me very much of this movie, and it also reminds me of Breaking Training. And I can't expose why at this point, because I want people to enjoy it. But as I watched my movie over and over again, as we made it and I cut it and put it together, I'm like, why do I get such a fucking Bad News Bears vibe from this? And there's a reason, a wonderful fucking reason. And it makes absolute sense. But it was... one of those things I didn't realize, I wasn't cognizant of until I saw the movie when it was finished. And I'm the guy that wrote the fucking flick. But when I saw the movie, when I cut it all together, I was like, oh, that's where that came from. Came directly from this movie. If you like Jane, Silent Bob Reboot, you'll owe a debt of thanks to the Bad News.
Is there a plot point in there, or just the overall vibe, or you don't want to give it away?
I want to give it away, okay. But it's definitely overall vibe, and there's some plottage stuff as well. That's how deep I go with this movie. I understand, you know, Paramount going, hey, we want to try it again, and reaching out to the guy who did School of Rock is probably on paper the smartest fucking thing you could do. Richard Linklater was also a baseballer. Mm-hmm. Like, he fucking played baseball. Like, it was either baseball or film. It's not about that, though. I get him saying yes and making the movie he did with Billy Bob Thornton. I would have been tempted to do it as well. But this movie's so fucking sacrosanct to me. The only way you could do the only way I couldn't have done a remake, but I would do a sequel series. You know how with Cobra Kai, they did like, this is what
That's
happened
a good idea.
Years
yeah,
later.
Yeah.
I honestly feel in my heart of hearts, they should do a sequel series to The Bad News Bears where Tatum O'Neill,
Amanda,
who plays Amanda, is Amanda grown up. And she's had some fucking problems, maybe some drug things that put her in court like fucking Bombay, where, you know, she's like, look, you got to do community service. So pick one of these things off the list. And she fucking picks baseball.
Right.
And then who's the coach of the other team but Kelly Leak?
That's a great call, because you could have, like, that's the one thing that works about Cobra Kai, is you have the two generations and the two stories within those generations. Right. I think
I want to do a love story, though. Like, so basically, you know, they start off being opposing, you know, coaches and shit, but like, they went on a fucking date many years ago. This is like 40 years later and shit, to like, you know, find fucking love or whatever through baseball. And yes, you get to cast a whole new generation of fucking kids. Maybe you do a thing where he's the coach of the fucking girls team and she's the coach of the guys team or something, like the boys team and shit. So that throws him into a competitive kind of thing, and he can play with gender. But to bring those two back and then to have them talk about the influence of Morris Buttermaker, of that team, where it was in their fucking lives. When I saw Cobra Kai, I was like, God damn it. You can totally do this with
that. Wow, that's a great pitch, man.
I want him to do it. I don't even need to do it, dude. I just want to see it. Like, you know, when she was here, when Tatum O'Neill was here, I was fucking like, this is what you guys should do. And she was like,
do you think she would do it?
She said in a heartbeat.
That's the thing, because I know at first that Ralph Macchio didn't want to do it.
Had to talk
and then realized how huge it was going
to
be.
I'm so glad they talked him into it, because that's clever and it's good and it's a great way to extend without, like, let's try to do this in a movie, man. Mm-hmm. But like, you could do a deep dive. You could do such an amazing character study on the two kids, or more if you want to bring the other ones back. But definitely two kids, Kelly Leak and Amanda Wurlitzer, whose lives were so profoundly affected by that one season with Morris Buttermaker. Mm-hmm.
Because it
might have saved Kelly Leak from a life of fucking crime, or
all of them, though. And I think Amanda as well, because if you're looking at this, and once again, you're saying fan fiction, but from what we're seeing in the movie, like, it redeems Buttermaker, who's a drunken bum. He even says, I'm a bum, I'm a buffoon, whatever. Amanda now has a father figure and a direction. Kelly Leak is not going to just drive his motorcycle. There's a scene earlier that we missed where he drives the motorcycle right into the side of the fence.
Right.
And it's like, that's a car crash. Like, you're going to die.
Right.
And then you throw in Tanner, who's just obviously just a Napoleon complex little dick. He gets direction. All of them do. Like, even like we said, Lupus and Engelbert and, you know, all of these kids, even the ones that are very minimal in the script, they're all learning and getting something. And if we had that, or my kids had that, or your daughter had that, it's the one summer in your life where you go, you can think back to it. Like, I have a teacher that I can think back to that was like a Buttermaker for me in high school. He's a science teacher. His name is Mr. Watson. He died years ago. Probably never even knew this, but shaped my life today from what he taught me then. And it wasn't all wine and roses. It was like a little bit like you're kicked out of class and you don't get in and you get a zero. And like, if you're lucky enough as a kid to have someone that's allowed to treat you like a kid, which in this day and age is not very encouraged.
Right.
You have to treat kids with kid gloves.
Right.
In these days, 70s and 80s, to an extent, you didn't have to. And it taught you how to be a person, how to be a man, how to be a woman, whatever. And that's what I love about Bad News Bears, is like, they all learn from each other. And we learned from it as kids this age. But like I said, you can still show it to kids in this day and age. And I mentioned in the first podcast that I showed them to my kids, and they learned something from this.
Two of the greatest sports movies ever made came out within 6 months of each other. This and then Rocky.
And I'll do you one better for another 6 months after that was probably Slapshot.
That's true. My God, you're right.
That's another one. And they all have the same theme. Team is not great. Ne'er-do-well losers. Gritty. Real life. Taught by a coach who did not take no for an answer.
There's a bit of Mr. Chips in Bad News Bears. Yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Yeah.
Like, and of course, later on, years after this, Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm.
He's an unorthodox teacher.
Yeah.
That reaches these kids in a way that others didn't care to or wouldn't speak to them on their level. And like, because of him.
But to have that writing, though, too, like you said, in 76, and you said, is it Mike Ritchie that wrote this? Or sorry, Bill Lancaster wrote it, but it's wise beyond his years. Mm-hmm. I bet you when this movie came out, we could probably Google it. People thought, like, I'll probably be all right. And it was a huge hit because it's real. But I bet you when you read this on a script as a movie, you know, studio, you'd be like, yeah. I don't know, whatever.
They did a test screening of this movie. I was shocked to read. Because I did an event for SIA where we watched a movie. And so I know I got a lot of trivia on this movie, but they also gave me shit from their archives. And apparently they test screened the movie. And there's a version where the Bears win.
Mm.
And kids that they test screened the movie for indicated that they wanted the Bears to lose.
Mm.
Like, that's fascinating to me.
Made them cooler? Or?
I don't even think kids were self-aware enough to know cool. I mean, you were talking about the era of Happy Days, so cool was a word being thrown around quite a bit, but I just think authenticity. I think, and God bless those children in that test audience who fucking said, no, the kids should lose. Because that made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, like, there's a whole generation that loves their Mighty Ducks and whatnot. And God bless. That's good. But I so appreciate being shaped by a movie where they showed you it was okay to not be number one. Like, that just playing, that just being involved. Like, that would shape my life. I'm not a guy who's like, I want to win an Oscar. I just want to play.
Mm.
Like, these kids, they weren't trying to win the championship.
But you know what else too, Kevin? So, like, this year, thankfully, I was off for the first half, and I coached my daughter's floor hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of girls, never played. And it was hard at first because they weren't good. But there was one point, I think, three. They only have, like, it's different now. They have five games or something. But game three, like, it came down to the last minute, and they won. And when those kids won, it was one of the most
cinematic.
So cinematic. Like, I could show you the video, like, just like jumping up and down, screaming. It was a Stanley Cup for them. They didn't win another game again. But for this group of kids that had never played to get it together enough to win a game, that was a victory. And that's why I like, I think what you're saying about Bad News Bears is that they're so bad at the beginning that for them to come and win the championship is so not believable.
Right.
But for them to come close and actually win some games, that's the victory.
That is.
Yeah. And like Rocky, they gained more from losing than they ever would from winning.
Why did they change that formula?
I don't know. And it also is like, why was breaking training such a half squad? Like, what happened? All these kids want to be movie stars. And everyone wants to make movies. Why did they lose half the squad?
Well, I think right away what hurt, like, somebody was like, oh, you know what the Bad News Bears is? It's just kids cursing at each other.
Right.
So we got most of the kids. We don't need her.
Yeah.
And we don't need him.
Right.
The old man. That wasn't the key. But, like, are you kidding me? Those were the two keys.
Yeah.
That was the emotional heart and soul of the fucking movie. So considering that movie had its heart cut out, like, of the franchise, the fact that they were able to make a watchable movie is pretty amazing.
But you have to be on their side of the fence. Like, if you go on IMDb, or it's like, you know, Bad News Bears is a, you know, 95, and Breaking Training is a 60, and Japan is a 20. Mm. For us, we're on the team. Like, and maybe a lot of it is because we grew up, like, I watched these movies on TV. Like, when I was a kid, once again, you had three channels. And, you know, Saturday night, Bad News Bears at 8 o'clock. And they promote it all week, and then you get to watch it. And then, you know, the next weekend, Breaking Training till 8 o'clock. So you didn't just get a chance to Netflix this or Amazon this or YouTube that. Like, you got what you were served.
It was a special occasion.
Yes. And when they served Bad News Bears and served Breaking Training, it was like, I'm going to be there no matter what.
The once or twice a year that
you're going to get. And then once you get into it, it's like, well, I love these movies because they were movies that related to me. And I didn't have to watch, like, a Basil Rathbone movie or something.
Or watch Beachcombers in Canada.
Relic.
Or The King of Kensington. You're like, holy shit.
Al Waxman.
They're doing it right in America.
What I usually like to do with these things is what was your favorite scene in the movie The Bad News Bears?
That's tough, man, because there's so many. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I think, hands down, I think it's the scene between Buttermaker and Amanda where he...
throws the beer?
Yeah. I would have looked you up just 2 years ago, don't you think?
I would have, yeah.
That scene is brilliantly paced, wonderfully acted, heartbreakingly fucking real. Now, it wouldn't be real to, like, maybe most kids today, because they're like, are you kidding me? If some fucking adult threw beer at me, I'd call the fucking my mother and the cops, and I'd have a lawyer, and I'd sue him, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, that's, you know, drama is watching people in conflict.
Hmm.
What a fucking conflict that scene is. And not just the conflict of, like, oh, he's yelling at this little girl, and he threw some beer in her face and shit. He's conflicted himself. You see it when she walks away. He's torn up that they went through that fucking moment. He knows he's a piece of shit. Now she knows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where her fucking tears come from.
Right.
Such a powerful fucking scene. And again, hats off to them for never giving them, like, you know, a 5 minute, you know what? It really hurt me when you did that.
He said, lesser writer than me would...
I would have written 10 pages and shit. Like, so that scene, like, and it's tough because Tanner is a hero of mine. So, like, I should pick a Tanner scene, but God damn it, if that's not a beautiful piece of performance.
I have two, just for food for thought. One is Lupus getting ketchup on his head, and then Tanner going, "Want some of my burrito? Come on, you're gonna love it." And sticks it in his face, and then Tanner gets thrown in the garbage can. And then Lupus comes up to him and said, "Nobody ever stood up for me before." That was a breakthrough for both of the characters.
Yes, huge.
Lupus as a loser, Tanner as this, you know, little ne'er-do-well, you know, pissed off guy
who cares only about himself.
Yeah, and brilliant. Also just wants to fight and realize like we actually have a connection. Like we stood up, we had each other's backs. We got our asses kicked.
We're a team.
We're a team. The other one to me was the first Buttermaker babyface turn with Ahmad in the tree when he's talking about, "Come on, you know what I'm talking about. 42 arrows. What do you mean? You know what I'm like? Don't be so stupid to not know what I'm talking about." So the kid goes, "Well, of course I know what you're talking about. Like well, Hank Aaron had 42 arrows." That, like I said, there's so many back and forth with Buttermaker in this, from good guy, bad guy, good guy, bad guy, asshole, we hate him. That was the first time you ever saw him as like, this guy cares about these kids.
He's given him permission to fail.
Yeah.
Which is something that like most adults aren't going to give those
right,
kids.
Right.
Like even right, you know, the birth of their team comes from like the maybe one of the original helicopter parents.
Mm.
Like a guy who's just like, my child should be allowed to play just like all other childs. Sues, takes the city to court or whatever, the league to court.
Right.
And puts the ball in motion. An adult with an agenda starts this movie. And an adult with no agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Is the hero. Great of this point. Movie.
Even Whiteworth even says, you know, none of these parents have any time to do any of this. And Lord knows I would love to do it, but the city hall is so busy. It's like, he's a hypocrite.
Yeah.
It's like, just take this check and just take care of these kids and fucking leave me alone.
Maybe that's why the kids like Buttermaker so much, other than like, he lets them clean the pool and drink beer and fucking talks real to them. But like, he's not selling them a false bill of goods. He's not full of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fantastic movie. I'll spend my entire life trying to make something a tenth as good as fucking Bad
Movie. But it's funny. Like I said, this is a movie, for me, it's very special. And it's cool to have someone that feels about it. I've met other people that like the Bears, but oh, I like Bears. You actually go deep with it. And
doesn't
it
break
your
heart that like it's not as
yes
celebrated?
But once again, I feel the same way about the Warriors. I feel the same way about the Outsiders. These are movies to me that means so much. What's the Warriors about? It's not about a bunch of gangs. There's such a deep, there's so much behind it. Same with the Outsiders and same with this. And you talk about, oh, I love Star Wars. I love Star Wars. And I love Raiders of the Lost Ark and name your movie. But to me, like Infinity War, it's such a great action piece. Totally. It's got 1% of the heart for me that this movie does.
Yeah.
Like this is real. You don't have to go to space to experience Outsiders, Warriors, Bad News Bears.
That's true.
And that's why I love these movies. They're real because they've happened to us in a certain way.
I don't want to spoil it, but there's a wonderful Warriors nod that you brought to Jay and Silent Bob reboot that has made it all the way through every cut.
Oh, nice. I'm glad to hear, because you never know what the cuts are going to be. You know?
It was easy to include because it was sold with such conviction.
But your movie is based on that. Like, I'm reading the script, there's a lot of homages to
totally
other movies.
That's why it fit in.
And that's where
well.
I got the idea from it. And plus, I had just done the podcast about the 40th anniversary of this great movie.
So it was fresh in your mind.
Yeah. And the thing I love about all three of those movies that we're talking about is they all have a great team of characters. Mm-hmm. And whether you're talking about Ponyboy and Soda and Derry and Dally, or Fox and Swan and Rembrandt and Ajax, or Ogilvy and, you know, Tanner, and like it's like, you know, it's Whitewood, like every one of those groups is a gang. One plays baseball, one's a street gang, one is like, you know, these kids trying to make it in 60s Tulsa, Oklahoma. I like that shit.
Yeah.
Cause I always wanted to be a part of the gang. And I always had a couple friends, like, okay, you be Tanner and you be, oh, I don't want to be Oakley. Okay. You be fucking, you know, Whitewood, or you be, you know, Harpo Marx. You could delegate responsibilities to the other guys in your gang of who they're going to be. Right. And yeah, you don't forget that stuff.
It shapes who we are.
It does, man. Dude.
Two kids from two different countries.
Yes.
Fall in love with the same movie. It stays part of their lives. You know, people see movies all the time and they don't all go like, fuck, man, I'm still thinking about this one 43
years
after its fucking release and stuff. But that's the profound effect. I wonder if it's, do you think it's just white kids?
I don't think so. I think, I'm sure those, I mean, the thing about Bad News Bears is there is diversity, like we said. So we love Tanner and we love, you know, Amanda. And, but maybe there's Ahmad in there for the guys. And there's, you know, I don't know if anyone ever say, like, I love Miguel. He's my hero. But Ahmad's great in this, you know. And he also appears in Breaking Training as well. But maybe white kids. I don't know. Maybe. It's not like it's Boys in the Hood on the baseball diamond. But maybe it's a suburban thing. You know, I don't know how many.
That too.
Yeah. I don't know how many guys in the hood were reading Crack magazine. Like I said, like that was all of this tied in for what we were into. And there's no black cats in the Outsiders. There's some in the Warriors and there's even less in the Bad News Bears. So maybe it is a white suburban thing. I don't know.
It's because it is something you throw the title around and, you know, now in this day and age, no kid fucking really knows it and stuff. But even people who were kids when we were kids are like, oh, yeah. And you're like, what do you mean, oh, yeah?
But see, let me say this, though. Is this so wrong to say this? Like, is it about white suburb kids? You are one. I'm one.
Yeah.
It appeals to us. Maybe we're the demographic it's supposed to appeal to. Maybe every movie isn't supposed to be completely diverse across the board.
Right.
Maybe it is. All I know is I love that movie. And I love all the movies we discussed. I don't know the reasons why.
And that movie, to be fair, like, too, even though it is, like, you know, predominantly a white kids movie, champions diversity at a time when nobody was doing that. The idea of, like, you've got girls, you've got folks that aren't white. Like, it's, I don't know, it's a marvel of a little fucking flick. And that was done in a way of not, like, hey man, we gotta check some boxes. They were just like, well, this is what a little team looks like.
It's organic, yeah. And like I said, for me, I did not grow up in that area where there was that type of diversity. So to me, it was the most diverse movie in the world. There's a black guy, there's some Mexican guys, there's a girl in there. Like, to me, like, for every
it was
team
the United
was,
Nations of kids movies.
Right. Every team I was ever on, you can look at our team picture, everyone's white and we're all got the same bowl cuts. And, you know, some guys were good, some guys sucked, but we all played hockey or baseball because that's just what you do when you're a kid,
right?
You know, and I remember, like we said earlier, these scenarios. Sometimes you win, sometimes we all knew Joey Turner, who was so good you just fucking hated him. We all had a lupus on the team.
Some of us were lupus on the team.
Hey, let me just say this as we wrap up. That's how I found out I needed glasses from playing baseball.
Is that right?
I missed the pop fly every time. And finally, my coach one day went, have you ever had your eyes checked? I'm like, why? He goes, because you fucking can't see shit. And I went and got my eyes checked, and that's why I started getting glasses at the time.
He was your butter maker, bro.
He was. He was only about 17.
And he gave you the gift of vision.
Kevin, what a great... great time, man.
It was great watching the fucking movie with you, man.
Yeah, man.
Especially one that we both dig on. Chris's podcast, of course, is called Talk is Jericho. You can see him everywhere. He's a big figure on Twitter and Instagram. Now you're gonna see him fucking wrestling again.
Yep. All Elite Wrestling. And by the time this airs, we might have already done it. We probably have.
That's true.
Because we're not gonna air it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it was a great show, and I hope everyone enjoyed it.
You'll see him. You'll see us together.
You know what we have to do?
I should say, like, again, I'm keeping it vague because I don't want to spoil it, but like you and I particularly,
yes,
share a scene.
We had a great scene.
Yeah.
And if you ever watch a Jay and Silent Bob movie, you know that Silent Bob has lots of scenes, but there's always one monumental scene. I don't know if I'm saying too much. No, you know, is
that you're involved in that.
This is a great scene. And to me, like I said, like we have, we got two. I always say I got two Kevin Smith movies in the can. So whatever.
And most people are like, that's where Kevin Smith movies belong, in the can.
Not for me, dude. Not for me.
Amen. Thank God for a man with bad taste. There it is, man.
Cheers. There you go.
Thanks for coming back.
Back
and hanging out,
and the lights are on
as always. Yeah, thank God we're not in the fucking pitch dark. That's Smodcast this week for this week, man. I'm Kevin Smith.
I'm Ming Chen.
Have a week.
This has been a production of Smodco Internet Radio. Sir, only at smodcast.com.